بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم Etiquettes of Salat Part 6 The First Discourse Chapter 5 Concerning the Preservation of One's Ibadat from Satanic Exploitation One of the important esoteric etiquettes of Salat and other Ibadat which is deemed as one of the bases to all esoteric etiquettes and whose establishment is regarded as one of utmost gravity and precision is that of preserving one's ibadah from satanic exploitation and satanic interference. So here, in this session, inshallah, we want to cover the esoteric etiquette of preserving and freeing one's ibadah, cleansing, the method of cleansing one's ibadat, such as salat and other ibadat, from all forms of satanic exploitation. So here, what we should be heading towards is to understand what does it mean to cleanse, and a certain form of muraqabah, which Imam Khomeini's school of thought, Irfan-wise, will be disclosed. And also, what does satanic exploitation actually mean? Are we trying to free ourselves from someone or something which is outside us? Or is it all from within? Is it all a story and dimension of the soul? In chapter 23, verse 9, and in chapter 70, verse 34, when describing the believers, the Quran reads, الَّذِينَ هُمْ عَلَىٰ صَلَوَاتِهِمْ يُحَافِظُونَ Those who preserve their salats. Believers, although the mu'mineen themselves, there are many levels of mu'mineen, inshallah this will be discussed one day, Allama Tabatabai speaks of four different stages of Iman and four different stages of Islam. When you speak of four different stages of Islam, by default, there must be four different stages of Kufr. When you speak of four different stages of Iman, by default, there should be four stages of hypocrisy, Nifaq. Or, according to some, four degrees of shirk. Anyway, in these verses, believers of a higher class are described as those who preserve their salats. Now here, Imam Khomeini, being a mujtahid in fiqh too, he was a mujtahid in many sciences, being a mujtahid in fiqh, now with this verse, he's using it, he's analyzing it, and he comes to an important conclusion using fiqhi and usuli principles. He says, when the Quran says that the believers are those who preserve their salats, not the normal believers, believers of a higher degree. Anyway, the phrase, those who preserve their salats, Imam is saying that here, preserving their salats is used in the absolute sense. And therefore, it includes all degrees of preservation. It's a very delicate point, this. So they're not only preserving their salats form-wise or time-wise, tone-wise, conditions-wise, perfection-wise, or other things that in fiqh they use. However, here, they're preserving their salats, period. In the absolute sense, and Imam says this includes preservation from satanic exploitation. Don't just think that you've preserved your salat in one or two dimensions, now your salat is celestial. No, that's a minimum, and that's a very common layperson's way of thinking. You have to think much deeper than this. Here, all forms of preservation. You may never reach that stage, it doesn't matter. One's a wayfarer, one improves with time. That's why 2 days should never be alike for the wayfarer. One is always in the process of amelioration, improvement, self-development, and so on and so forth. So Imam says those who preserve their salat, yes, but it's in the absolute sense, it includes something else too. In addition to the external etiquettes, the timing, the tone, the fiqhi conditions, let's also include the esoteric dimensions of preserving a salat, a prayer, and that includes the preservation from satanic exploitation. Okay, then Imam continues. Imagine a physical body which requires physical food for purposes of nutrition and health in order to grow. For this growth to be realized, the food has to be on a par with the body's status quo. The body just can't ingest any food. Some people need a high salt intake, depending on the physical, geographical circumstances, or even genetic circumstances. Some need a high salt intake, some require a low salt intake. Some people need their meat to be well done, otherwise it will lead to problems. Some want their meat to be, you know, not so well done. Some people have to avoid meat altogether. Some like their rice like this, some like their rice another way. Some people can have lactose or gluten. Some people are intolerant to it. Some people have gout, they can't have certain foods. Some people are diabetic, and so on and so forth. These examples are my examples. Imam, I'm just trying to explain, or just to describe it, to give a more vivid description. So Imam though says, this physical body, it requires physical food for physical health. But for this growth, for example, this physical growth that it wants, by taking the food, this food that it takes has to be on a par with the body's status quo. You have to look at the health status quo of the person before he can choose, you know, what he or she can or cannot consume. Now, that's a physical example Imam is giving before he sets in the main purpose of bringing this example. In the same way, the spirit too needs food for inner and esoteric development and elevation. And here too, the food must be on a par with the spirit's status quo. Now this is important. Now we have a spirit, this is another dimension of the I. The physical body is one dimension of the I, but now we're speaking of the spirit, the soul. It wants to grow spiritually. The spiritual food, and Imam will say what he means by that, but the spiritual food that one consumes must be on a par with one's spiritual status quo. If you consume too much spiritual food, it can lead to side effects too. Those who recall when we spoke about death being defined philosophically as the soul's independence from the physical body, perfection-wise. When the soul can no longer acquire more perfection with this physical body, it leaves the body. That's called a natural death. I've spoken about this before. I don't want to, you know, go over repeated stuff too much. Now, that perfection may be in virtue or in vice. In vice, if someone can't do more vice with, for example, a hypocrite, they can't do more vice with this physical body, then the soul becomes independent from it. That is natural death for the bad person. Now here, sometimes, and I've seen many instances, and I've heard of these instances directly from the mentor themselves. There have been many mentors in spiritual wayfaring where they've stopped mentoring students in spiritual wayfaring after a certain period of time. And the reason was because their students were dying prematurely. They died at a very young age, 26, 28, and they had families and everything. And they underwent a natural death, but they underwent it too early. Why? Because the ustad, the mentor, when he was giving the knowledge and the certain practices for the student to execute, this student executed them to the dot It led to them acquiring perfection too early, and then when it reached a point that they couldn't acquire more perfection with this physical body, they passed away a natural death. Now that's the fault of the mentor. The mentor has to see, has to understand the spiritual status quo of the student. I mean, today it's all a game now for most people. This being a mentor, being students, it's become a joke because no one really now understands it. And that's why today you would hardly be able to find a real mentor. Real mentors don't come out. They see people from afar. They come to them instead of students playing around and going to anyone they think who is a mentor. One shouldn't play around. It has side effects. One of them is death, and the other is it brings about many troubles, which I don't want to go into that now. So here, you have to know the spiritual status quo of the person before you give that person spiritual food, even spiritual food, like the high salt intake, like overeating meat, like, for example, having lactose for someone who's intolerant to it. It has side effects. I've given this story before in one of the lectures where someone was given a prescription. Well, he was given a book, and in this book he found this prescription. This book was in the occult sciences. And occult sciences, there are many different types. There's a halal type and there's a haram type. And anyway, he got the book, it was halal, he got it through inheritance, and he went through it, but he wasn't a scholar of any sort, and he wasn't ready to digest the material. It was passed on to him through inheritance. And what happened was, he kept on reading these certain prescriptions in the book, and the person became psychotic. And this And why did he become psychotic? Because of the visions he was having. He had visions of very, very severe visions. It led him to be psychotic. And it led to all kinds of problems at the home, at the workplace. He had to quit home and the work. He had to divorce. Well, the wife got a divorce from him. And for many years, this person was under severe medication after just having one vision by means of a formula that was too much for him. These things exist, and we have to be careful here. These aren't a joke. We have to stick with the common formulae which the Ahlul Bayt is given. Now, all these examples I'm giving is just to, you know, understand that the spirit too needs food. Right, but this food has to be that spiritual food for one's esoteric development, has to be that food has to be on a par with one's spiritual status quo, otherwise it will lead to side effects. Then Imam says the food that accords with the domain of the spirit is that of divine knowledge. That's the food. Divine knowledge is spiritual food. And we grow spiritually if we are a recipient to the correct divine knowledge. And it has to be both correct, and we have to ingest it in the right amounts. It shouldn't be overdone. The minimum is that which the Sharia dictates and asks of us to commit and to learn. That's the minimum. When you want to receive more and more, it has to be done under controlled supervision. So, the food is that divine knowledge, including everything from the start to the end of existence. Ingesting divine knowledge from Allah, from Tawheed to Ma'ad, resurrection. This has to be fed upon the soul. And then Imam says, that's why experts have defined philosophy as the conversion of man, or man's becoming into, or the conversion of man into, an immaterial world that is on a par with, or that matches with, the physical world, both form-wise and perfection-wise. Now that's a definition experts have given in relation to philosophy. Now this definition, inshallah, I'll open it up soon, but it's referring to spiritual nutrition and how and what man must become when ingesting spiritual food. What man has to grow into. The definition says conversion of man or man's becoming into an immaterial world. But an immaterial world that matches the physical world. Form-wise and perfection-wise. It's on a par with the physical world. But man is becoming. As one is a recipient to spiritual, divine knowledge and is ingesting the food, man is becoming, moment to moment, day after day, meal after meal. Is becoming what? It's becoming an immaterial world. Man is becoming an immaterial world. What kind of immaterial world? We'll explain it in a minute. But it matches the physical world. There's a sun in the physical world, man has a sun. There's a moon in the physical world, man has a moon. There's a mountains, man has mountains. There are prophets, man has prophets. What does all this mean? Now all this, this becoming into this immaterial world is by executing the Sharia, the divine rituals, and the Tariqah. And we've spoken about that before in a lot of depth. Now, here, what does it mean when we speak of, okay, the way is through the Sharia and the Tariqah. You can become an immaterial world which matches the physical world. But we need to understand this idea of becoming an immaterial world. What does it mean? We have traditions on this too. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. وَتَحْسَبُوا أَنَّكَ جِرْمٌ صَغِيرٌ. Do you think you're just a small lump of flesh in this body of yours, 1 meter, 70 whatever, or with 80 kilograms of weight and this and that? You think that's it? You think you, أَنَّكَ, you think you, the human, is that it? A lump of flesh, whilst wafika, whilst within you, intawal alamul akbar, within you lies a greater realm, a greater world. Now this has to be understood. Don't forget the definition, man's becoming into an immaterial world. See, these definitions of the philosophers, the ulafa, they give, it's all based on the Quran and the traditions. They don't go aside and away or distance themselves from the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt. They have 250 years of treasure, of traditions from these immaculate, infallible individuals. And those traditions all being esoteric interpretations of the Qur'an, which is the basis to everything. It's all derived from the Qur'an. They're not just making this up. So we can also become the world. But we can become an immaterial world. Don't think you're just a piece of flesh. Now Ayatollah Hasanzadeh Omri, hafizahullah, has opened this idea up to some extent. So I'm going to read from one of his books now, which I've translated this part of, that extract I've translated for you. Before that, just one point, so to make you more prepared to digest what Ayatollah Hasanzadeh has to say. The Urafa believe that the cosmos, okay, whatever is a manifestation of all of Allah's attributes. All of Allah's attributes are manifesting in the cosmos, moment to moment. Man, insan, Khalifatullah, also has this capacity. Like the cosmos, like the physical world, forgive the expression, man, like the physical world, like the physical cosmos, also has the potential to manifest all of Allah's attributes. Okay, so that's one important premise to understand. That in the same way that the cosmos is manifesting all of Allah's attributes, man too has that capacity, man alone has that capacity to be a manifestation of all of Allah's attributes. On the side, the Qur'an also is a book where all of Allah's attributes are manifesting. So, إِنَّا أَنزَلْنَاهُ فِي لَيْلَةِ الْقَدْرِ is using the pronoun we. We've revealed here. We being all of Allah's attributes in play, in manifestation. The zuhur of all his attributes are active here. So, and this can be seen in many other parts of the Qur'an too. Be very sensitive when you see the pronoun we. For example, we poured the rain and so on and so forth. Why? What's the relationship between all of Allah's attributes and rain? If you think about it, you'll come to the answer soon. Okay, so here, let's go into one of Ayatollah Hasanzadeh's books. Ayatollah Hasanzadeh has many books. Some of them are milestone books. Some of them are major reference points to understand Ayatollah Hasanzadeh's books. One of those is called 1001 Words. Hizaru Yek Kalame. Now the reason I'm mentioning these is because I get many emails from many people. They want to know the books that I'm reading. Well, first of all, in the seminaries, you know, one's knowledge is mainly based on the studies in the seminaries. There are many sciences. One has to study all of them bit by bit. But in relation to Ayatollah Hasanzadeh, this particular book is a very good book. Yes, it's very difficult. It has many difficult areas. If one is alone and they don't have the seminary background, not only will they not understand it, they probably misunderstand it, and then many things will go wrong. I recall once I referred someone to a book by Sabzawari, the famous philosopher, about 150 years ago. It's a very good book, and I very foolishly referred it to someone, a lay person, and then that person referred to the book, and since they knew Arabic, they kept on reading it, and they came up with the most atrocious conclusions for themselves, and that really was a lesson for me. And that book may have been simple for some people, but I didn't look at the person's, I didn't take heed of the person's, you know, capacity to absorb this kind of thing. And that was something which really was very difficult for me to absorb too. But anyway, this book, if you understand Arabic and Farsi, because it's mixed, some parts in Arabic, some parts, it's 1001 very important points there. And you'll benefit a lot, especially if it's under supervision and you have the necessary background. Anyway, this is from that book. He first said in the verse, وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا, where famous verse in Surah Al-Baqarah, I can't remember the verse now, where Allah is teaching Adam alayhi salam all the names. He's saying that this is denoting man's true identity, i.e. a manifestation of Allah's attributes, attributes which constitute the truth of all things, meaning that whatever is in the cosmos is a manifestation of Allah's attributes. Now man's identity too is being a manifestation of all of Allah's attributes. Which attributes? Attributes from which everything is a manifestation of. And then he continues, and man's heart, this is Ayatollah Hasanzadeh, and man's heart, once it becomes informed or incorporates these attributes, these attributes become the spiritual food of the heart. You see how things are becoming to link bit by bit now together. Rather, it becomes the heart here referring to the soul. And it is this heart that is referred to by traditions that state that in relation to the container of knowledge, that whatever enters the container of knowledge, it expands in proportion. Here, the soul being that container of knowledge, the container of ilm. Now, it doesn't mean like a physical container and you pouring something physical into a physical container. No. Here, whatever you pour, whatever you incorporate, it makes the soul, the container, expand more and more. It doesn't become more and more limited like a physical container. It becomes more and more limited. Here, no. As you learn, as you incorporate divinity, you, the soul, expands more and more. When I say you, the soul, that's not a very accurate description of what the I is, but still, the soul is still a dimension. It's a very higher dimension of the I than the physical body. It's all in unity with one another. But what the I is, that's another debate. But I'm using I and soul here rather loosely, just to convey the matter. Okay, so here, in those traditions, they speak of the container of ilm, container of knowledge, referring to the heart, the soul, and then whatever is poured into it, the soul, the heart, is now expanding. The more you put in, the more it expands. The growth of the spirit, the growth of the soul, is directly in proportion to knowledge, directly proportion to ilm. Although what kind of ilm, that's another issue here. So that heart, and Ayatollah Hasan Zadeh continues, that heart that covers all beautiful names and is a manifestation of all exalted attributes pertains to the perfect man, insan al-kamil, or the ma'asum. Although ismat has degrees too, but the ismat of the 14 infallibles is different to the ismat, the infallibility of the 124,000 prophets. It's different to the ismat of the saints and the disciples. It's a term which has many instances and aspects to it. One can become the perfect man. Another term for perfect man, one is ma'asum, another is the kummalin. For example, you may have heard. It's all referring to the same thing, but all these terms, they have degrees. Degrees lie within them. It's not black and white. So, he says, that heart that covers all the beautiful names and is a manifestation of all the exalted attributes, it pertains to the perfect man. And in accordance with essential and providential potential of each name, in accordance with the essential and the takwini potential of each name, because each name, each attribute of Allah manifests in a particular manner, on a par with that essential and takwini, providential potential of that name, the name exerts a certain ruling, a certain effect, it has a certain definition and boundary. So he says these names, depending on the name, depending on its potential, it manifests in a way whose definition, boundaries, rulings and effects differs from one another. It all depends on the name. By way of example, Ayatollah Hasan Zadeh writes, they will call one, now remember the definition Imam gave, that philosophy is the conversion of man into an immaterial world, but this immaterial world matches with the physical world. He says, for example, they will call one Gabriel, if one informs another from their metaphysical realms. In this world, if one acquires knowledge to a certain degree, that one has access to the metaphysical, and then on having those visions, that access to the metaphysical realms, you become a recipient to knowledge and teach people this knowledge, you are now Gabriel. That man's becoming into an immaterial world, Gabriel becomes a dimension of you. Now, Gabriel, the archangel, has an immaterial, indivisible, timeless form of existence. We're not referring to that. But anything that lies outside you, in whatever realm of existence, you can become that. Your soul can become that. If you have access to the metaphysical realms and you receive divine knowledge and you teach it to others, you will also, you have a Gabriel dimension within you. They will call him Mikael if one offers and donates ma'arif and the makarim to those who seek it. Let's say you are a possessor of divine knowledge, of divine lordly ethics, and you donate this, you offer it to those who seek it, and you give this as a way of sustenance to those who want it, you become Mikael. You have a Mikaeli dimension within you. Now look at the soul here, this multidimensional soul that is you. It's becoming an immaterial world. You are becoming Mikael, you're becoming Jibrail. They'll call you Israfil if the person conveys ma'ad and the return to those who search for it. There, Israfil, if you can allow people or afford them the opportunity to convey resurrection, so they undergo resurrection whilst in this realm, you too, because you're granting a certain form of life to people who are living physically in this physical world, but they're undergoing ma'ad, they're undergoing resurrection and the return. If you can grant that to people, you are Israfil. Your Israfili dimension has actualized. And they'll call you Israel if they kill the traveler's nafsul ammara. If you manage to kill the ego, the dimension that commands you, people, to sin, to commit vice, if you kill this aspect in travelers to Allah, in students who come to you to ask for how to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if you manage to kill that aspect within them, you kill that ego, you too are Israel. You're becoming an immaterial world. Everything that exists outside you, in all realms, you become, day after day, moment after moment. And then, it's quite a long extract, but I've chosen a few sentences from it. He says, Ayatollah Sanzadeh, you become Adam if you teach those who are looking for guidance. You become Noah, Hazrat Nuh alayhi salam, Nabi Nuh, if you save those who are stuck and struck in the storm of affliction, if you save them. People who are living in various places, they can't get out, they really have trouble, they're really burdened, and you relieve their burdens. You acquire that Nuhi dimension. Ibrahim, if they let go of the fire of existence, killing that which is Nimrod Philic and becoming Allah's friend. If you kill that fire of ego within, and you kill that which is world-loving, Nimrod Philic, because Nimrod, he had a love of the world. If you can kill that within you, and become, after killing these aspects, you become Allah's friend, that khulla, which the Quran speaks of, a specific form of friendship. This concept of friendship, and especially in relation to Ibrahim alayhi salam being Allah's friend, this, I once spoke about it in the Vatican, it's readily available, the article, it's online. But if once you succeed at doing all these three, then the Ibrahimi dimension within you becomes actualized. You become Ibrahimi. Then your Moses, if one drowns the pharaonic existence within the Nile of non-existence, and who calls upon the beloved on the mountain of proximity, the mountain of Qurb, if you kill the Pharaoh self-conceited, arrogant existence within you, within this whole huge ocean, this Nile, the River Nile, the Nile of non-existence, where non-existence meaning here that everything other than Allah, not non-existence in the sense of, something, there's something concrete called non-existence. No. Think other than Allah, that huge, that ocean of other than Allah that we're drowned in. We're drowned in the river Nile, but you kill that pharaonic existence within this river, the same way that Pharaoh got drowned in that river. You manage to kill that Pharaoh attributes, those pharaonic attributes within you. And you were called upon, or you called upon the beloved on the mountain of proximity with your mi'raj, becoming closer and closer to Allah. If you succeed having such a mi'raj, if you succeed killing the pharaonic existence within, you too, yes, you also have a Moses dimension within you. You too also can be called Moses. You can be called Khidr, Nabi Khidr, if one attains to Ladunni knowledge, where you are now, you become someone who has and is a direct recipient to divine knowledge, rather than the acquired form of knowledge that we acquire in this realm. If you are a recipient to this form of knowledge, the Ladunni knowledge, where knowledge from the metaphysical is directly given to you, yes, you're also called Nabi Khidr. Okay. Then he says you can also be called Elias, alayhi salam. You can be Luqman. You can be called Plato, Solomon, Isa, Mahdi, Yusuf. He goes through all the names and he describes why. And then it'll take too long. If I just give a commentary of these names, it'll take a very long time. And then, but he adds towards the end, these were all people. Now let's go to the physical world. He says, you will be the sun if one's compassion shines on all. If you have a lot of compassion, and this compassion permeates to all people around you, you also will be a sun. See, you're becoming an immaterial world within. That's you. But this world within isn't within the physical flesh. It's a limitless, infinite world. But it's all you in dimension. And then, in the same way that the physical sun has certain effects, it shines on all, the same sun, once that same sun is translated into the sun of your immaterial world, how? If your compassion shines on all, and then you will also be the sun. You will also, the same attribute which led to the manifestation of the physical creation that is called the sun, that same attribute, if incorporated within you through compassion to all, you will also have a sun, but it's not physical. Your sun is immaterial, or semi-immaterial at least. Because, okay. You will have clouds if you satiate the seekers of knowledge with divine knowledge. And he keeps on going into other different examples in the worldly realm. In short, the world and whatever lies outside it is in it. It's in man. Not in the physical sense. Man is a multidimensional creature. Man, this is a very important principle, always have in mind that man, or the I, it's a multidimensional creature or entity extending from the physical earthly realm to realms beyond the divine throne. There's no limit. There's no limit even to its different levels of immateriality. Okay. Now, let's go back to Imam and other wasa'ab. I thought that was important because Imam kind of went through this in a code form way. I just wanted to open it up a bit. Now, assuming each of these spiritual foods are purified from satanic exploitation, So each of the things that you're ingesting, the knowledge and the actions that you do, if they're purified from satanic exploitation, then we still haven't opened up what we mean by satanic. And we still haven't opened up what we mean by this process of cleansing and being purified. How this has to, you know, actually come around. These things, it has to be explained. Assuming each of these spiritual foods are purified from satanic exploitation and are executed within the framework and are under the guidance of the Holy Messenger and Imams, once the spirit feeds from such foods, it'll attain to that which man deserves, i.e. ascension to divine proximity. That's the outcome. Okay, fair enough. But let's see what the mechanism of achieving this outcome is. We want some practical tools so that it can help us to achieve this aim. Now, in discourse number one, the first discourse in Adab al-Salat, towards the end, you know, chapters 10 and especially 11 and 12, there's a lot of practical guidance. You know, very pure, secure, spiritual wayfaring tips that Imam Khomeini has given. And that all these are just preliminaries to those tips. And then from the second discourse onwards, with these tips and tools that he's given, only then we can incorporate it properly. Inshallah, we'll come to that soon. Okay. So, then he says, purification from satanic exploitation, which is the preface to purifying. You have to, you know, purify yourself from satanic exploitation in order to purify yourself in a heavenly manner. This will not lead to the truth, save except if the traveler, during one's journey, be Allah orientated and treads one's foot over egocentrism and egoism, which constitute the source to all vice and the mother of all esoteric illnesses. So he's saying that, look, we want to purify ourselves from satanic exploitation. So far, we haven't gone deep enough to explain what satanic exploitation is. The common understanding applies to us at this moment, but we'll go into it in a minute. But for this purification of satanic exploitation, we need it, because we need it to purify ourselves, to elevate. These things have to be got rid of in order for us to be able to elevate. But this isn't possible, to purify oneself from satanic exploitation, if one doesn't do all things whilst recalling Allah, and also all traces of the ego has to go. Now here, it's still relatively general here, when he says you have to tread your foot upon and over all forms of egocentrism and egoism. It's true, but this has to still be opened up. It's true that all these constitute the source to all vice, and they are the mother of all esoteric illnesses, but still, there is room here to go even more deeper, and Imam will go more deeper. That's why I don't want to open it up here right now, because in later chapters, I can't recall which, but in this first discourse, it will be covered. Then, Imams, you have to forgive the noise of the chair. I'm on a different chair today, so it's a bit, you have to forgive me. So, then Imam says, accomplishing such a feat in its entirety, accomplishing such a deed in its entirety is not feasible save in the Holy Messenger and his successors. Only they can do it in its entirety. Only they have done it in its entirety. We can also acquire very high stages, even ismat to some degree. It's open to us. And you know, ismat I've spoken about before. It's a very broad term. But accomplishing this action of, you know, doing everything with based upon recalling Allah and eliminating all forms of egocentrism and egoism, do this 100%. That's confined to the 14 Ma'sumin. However, this should not lead to the traveler's despair. No, don't have any despair. You just follow, and before it's said, we have to execute all this in the framework and under the guidance of the Holy Messenger and the Imams. Now, fiqh is only one dimension. Ethics, irfan, other things. We have to follow the Imams, follow the Holy Messenger, word by word. Now, if it's a fiqhi dimension, the experts in fiqh, they tell us what the Imams have said. It helps us there. In action, in heart, here we go to the tariqa. The experts of the tariqa tell us how the Imams lived. All these things we have to follow very carefully. Everything has to be acquired through following these people. Now, there's a lot one can say here, but I don't want to, speak too much, but it will come, inshallah, in one of these sessions. However, this should not lead to the traveler's despair. After all, despair in Allah's mercy is, in addition to being a major sin, it's the cause to all spiritual weaknesses and fatigue. It's a cause to all spiritual weaknesses and a cause to all forms of spiritual fatigue. But one is now tired spiritually. It's all despair. It's a very important sentence here that the Imam has given. And one of the reasons why committing suicide is haram is because you had and experienced despair before Allah's mercy to a very large degree. That which is possible for the common lay person is the light, the comfort of the eyes of the people of Ma'rifah, and that is ascension. And this is possible. We may not be like the Imam, we may not be like the Holy Prophet, we can't acquire that status, but still we can acquire ascension, we can acquire perfection. As-salatu mi'rajul mu'min. Through salat we can ascend. All these are things which are possible for everyone. Hence, Imam continues, it is necessary for the traveler to the hereafter, they have to purify with all seriousness one's ma'arif, that knowledge, be it doctrine, be it ethics or whatever, that knowledge, that spiritual food, with all seriousness. The traveler has to purify it and has to purify one's actions from what? The exploitation of Iblis and the Nafsul Ammara. Very interestingly, Imam is saying the exploitation of Iblis and Nafsul Ammara. This "and" is, maybe it's commentating or describing or defining Iblis. Because some people regard Iblis as being, that's the forces that predominate, that lead to one's nafs, one's soul, being at such a low level that one is always drifted towards committing vice. Now this is very important, this concept of Iblis. Now Mullah Sadr has many things on it, and Faiz Kashani also has spoken about this in his Wafi, in his book called Al-Wafi, which is a commentary to Usul al-Kafi. I'll just read one or two quotes here. Mullah Sadr says, the Iblis of every person is one's soul's abidance by one's passions. Why are you looking for Iblis outside yourself? I don't want to negate a physical Iblis. I'm not doing that here. And what I'm going to say from Mullah Sadr and Faiz Kashani, it can be compatible with this. But we have to take things in the right proportion. Don't think everything is outside you. Even if there was a physical Iblis, even if there is a physical Iblis, the real threat is from within. That Iblis within is much more threatening to you. Mullah Sadr says in his book, The Elixir of the Gnostics, which I'm told has been translated into English, the Iblis of every person, although this is my own translation of the Arabic, the Iblis of every person is one's soul's abidance by one's passions. The more the soul abides by one's whims and passions, the more Iblis grows. But it's a dimension of the soul. It's you. However, the first to tread along misguidance and deviation from the realm of divine mercy was assigned the name Iblis. He was just assigned this name. And he's referring to a story where the first person who committed, who deviated and was misguided, he was called Iblis. He was called another name, I think Azrazil, something like that. And then he was given the name Iblis. Iblis comes from Tablis, which means, if I'm not mistaken, where you're hiding something. Yes, you're hiding truth. You're hiding your disbelief in relation to something. You're hiding it. And that's why with Nishta Iblis, when the Quran says Kana min al kafirin, he was of the kafirs. That kafir doesn't have to be taken as the canonical kafir, because Iblis believed in Allah even to the very end. And actually, Iblis, when he saw people only looking for Allah's mercy, this attribute of Allah, he went and he was looking for another attribute of Allah, and the philosophers have spoken about this in some depth. Now is not the time for that. So, anyway, the potential, therefore, is within us all. That's why the Holy Prophet, in one of the traditions, he says, everyone has a shaitan, but I've tamed mine. See, he's tamed it. He never let it grow. It always remained something potential. It never actualized from birth onwards. But the Iblis, the potential is within everyone, but it's within. That's the main threat. Faiz Kashani says in Al-Wafi, ignorance is the dark dimension of the soul that is created secondarily to and in the shadow of, it's created secondary to and in the shadow of the intellect, aql. Otherwise, ignorance is the dark dimension of the soul. It doesn't exist primarily. It only exists in the shadow of aql. Wherever the aql predominates, there's no ignorance. Whenever the aql, the intellect, fails, ignorance grows. Secondary, not independent from aql. It's when the aql fails, ignorance grows. So he says, this ignorance is a dark dimension of the soul that's created secondary to and in the shadow of the intellect. Without it, ignorance being created independently from the intellect. All the evil that arises on earth is established through it, i.e. through ignorance, or when the aql fails. And this is Iblis per se. Allahu Akbar. Faiz Kashani. This is Iblis per se. Now, he's given a commentary to Usul al-Kafi. The first chapter of Usul al-Kafi is speaking of aql and jahl. And it speaks of the army of aql and the army of ignorance. For example, in the army of ignorance, there's despair, there's injustice, and many other attributes, around 70. In the army of aql, intellect, there's hope, there's justice. In ignorance, opposite to hope, despair. Opposite to justice, injustice. Opposite to being grateful, being ungrateful, and so on and so forth. But as the more you don't use your aql, the more you deactivate your aql, your intellect, ignorance grows. But ignorance wasn't created independent from the aql. It's one reality. It has shades. Depends. These shades depend on how you act. If you allow the soldiers of the intellect to reign over and predominate over you, where you have hope, justice, gratitude, and so on and so forth, there are about 70 of them, here you would be a true intellect, a true manifester of the intellect. But the more of these attributes of the army of intellect you fail to disclose within you, you fail to practice, you fail to incorporate, there automatically in the shadow of this deactivation of the intellect, there grows and predominates ignorance. And these vicious attributes will grow within you, will predominate over you, and these attributes of ignorance, this is Iblis per se. Okay. going back to Imam. So Imam was saying that with all seriousness, one has to purify one's ma'arif, the doctrine, Islamic doctrine, one's actions, one's ethics, from the exploitation of Iblis. Now this, with those definitions now, things should now be coming a bit more apparent, what this purifying entails. What does it mean to purify yourself from satanic exploitation? It's all about incorporating X set of attributes and not allowing Y set of attributes to predominate. Then Imam says, okay, now we have that definition, that's very good, we're getting closer now, but practically speaking, can Imam go into anything further? He does now, but he does it very delicately. Imam says, one has to study carefully the relationship between the Nafsul Ammara and Iblis. And then he says, in any case, the traveler, the Salik, must evaluate carefully and scrutinize all one's actions. Now this is, he's now describing a certain form of muraghibe, a certain form of how to self-scrutinize oneself in order to allow the army of Aql to predominate over you. Because allowing the army of Aql to predominate over you was, in other words, that form of purifying yourself from satanic exploitation. How do we do that? You have to scrutinize yourself. How? Now, in any case, the traveler, the Salik, must evaluate carefully and scrutinize all one's actions and wants and goals, and to attain to the objective of one's journeying and learning, and to attain to the motivation behind one's inner movements and spiritual nourishment. Now, this is very difficult. And not to be oblivious to the deceptions of the nafs and shaitan, and not to be oblivious to the traps of the Nafsul Ammara and Iblis. You see, whenever you use Nafsul Ammara, he's using Iblis too. These are, you know, these are the kind of co-defining going on here. He says, if I just go one sentence back, you see, the Salik, just, this is, it's almost finishing, and it's, we're at a very essential part in this session, at least. He says, the Salik, the traveler, must evaluate carefully and scrutinize all one's actions. Okay, how? All one's wants. How? All one's goals. These all have to be scrutinized. The question remains, Imam, can you tell us how? Then Imam continues, and to attain to the objective of one's journeying and learning. Okay, how? And to attain to the motivation behind one's inner movements and spiritual nourishment, and not to be oblivious to the deceptions of the nafs and shaitan. How? And not to be oblivious to the traps of the Nafsul Ammara and Iblis. How? Then he says, and this is a certain form of muraghibah in the school of Irfan which Imam belonged to, one must, in all actions and movements, have complete su'udan to oneself, and to never let go of such a practice. Allahu Akbar. This is Muraghibe Imam Khomeini school. Now he belonged to a certain school of, or certain tariqah, sequence of urafa. His ustad was Shah Abadi, Muhammad Ali Shah Abadi, an incredible figure, who was a marja, and in addition to being a marja, he was a murshid in many fields. Shah Abadi's ustad was Ishkavari. Very, I don't want to speak out each of these, but these are very important scholars. Ishkavari's ustad was Muhammad Reza Ghomshi. Muhammad Reza Ghomshi's ustad was Bidabadi. Keep on going, back, you get to Mullah Sadra. It's very clear to those who have studied the works of these people, they see the Sadra line of thinking. And these people, they understand the Quran, they understand the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt through mechanisms of a tariqah which Mullah Sadra, and even those before Mullah Sadra, has put forward. These are very deep principles they're using. Now, muraghibah, in this silsila of urafa, Imam has open the lid a bit here. He doesn't do it all at once. One step of muraqaba is this, that if you want to really scrutinize all your actions, your goals, you want to attain to the objective of, you want to attain to the motivation behind those, behind one's inner movements, the motivation behind spiritual nourishment. You want to not to be oblivious to, you want to be oblivious to, well, not to be oblivious to the shaitan, the iblis, nafsul amare. You want to be, you know, scrutinizing all these, be aware of all these. How? This is the very important point. In all actions and movements, moment to moment. Now, if you're a beginner, it will be only a few minutes a day. If you're an intermediate, it may be 1 hour a day. If you're advanced, there's no limit. But moment to moment, you have complete su'uddan. Now, what does su'uddan mean? It means suspicion. You have to have complete suspicion. You have to be completely suspicious, wholly suspicious. To who? To two things. To oneself. You have to be completely suspicious to oneself. That's it. How you act, how you think, what you do, always be completely suspicious. Maybe I did this for other than Allah. Always ask yourself that before doing an action. Maybe I'm doing this for other than Allah. Maybe I did it for him or her or that thing or this thing. Or even in the beginning when your intentions were holy, then during that whatever project you've entered into, whatever action you're in the middle of, maybe suddenly there, don't let go of suspicion, Imam says, and never let go of such a practice. Because even sometimes in the middle, you may fail, in the middle of that action. This su'uddan has to be done in complete terms, complete suspicion to yourself. Because whatever comes out from you, whatever emanates from you, at the end it goes back to your intentions. Spirituality is a function of one's intentions. And then Imam says, the slightest compromise in this regard can be the cause to one's downfall and ultimate destruction. After all, if the spiritual nutrition is not purified of satanic abuse, and the latter even brings about the nutrition. So sometimes the spiritual nutrition that you're feeding the soul is not purified of satanic abuse. Or you do an action and you do it with good intentions, but then eventually those actions become polluted with satanic abuse, meaning, you know, those attributes, those vicious attributes predominating over you. But sometimes from the very beginning, when you do something, it's done satanically, if such an expression exists. From the very beginning, it was based on Satan. From the very beginning, the basis and scaffolding was all false, wicked vice. Sometimes you start off well, and in the middle you may fall. But some people from the very beginning, they're feeding themselves. See, feeding here becomes very important. In Muraqaba, for those who've listened to these lectures on Muraqaba, remember, these are filtering mechanisms that you have to go through to refine, to retune, tune the your intentions. Here, Imam is saying what one of those filtering mechanisms are. In those lectures which I gave Allama Tabo Tamboi's filtering mechanisms of Muraqaba. Now this is one of Imam Khomeini's. He also has three. And either in this book or in other books he mentions them. But here one of them appears. What's that? Action to action, moment to moment. Don't panic for beginners. And we're all beginners, me and you all together. It may only take a few minutes a day. Don't worry. No, spirituality takes time, and it has to take time. Those who see results too early, it's a weakness. Now, the great scholars have said this. It should take years and years of spiritual wayfaring. And the reasoning they give is very interesting. Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh has written about this in one of his books. Anyway, so what's this part? Which aspect of muraqabah? What is it? What must we do? These are practical examples now. Action to action. Always have complete suspicion to yourself on why you're doing it. And ask yourself, am I doing it for Allah or not? Moment to moment, action to action. After all, if the spiritual nutrition is not purified of satanic abuse, and the latter even brings about the nutrition, in brackets, for example, in the first place, you know, comparing two things here. When the latter even brings about the nutrition, it means here, comparing it, when in the very first place, when you're doing an action, it's already contaminated with satanic abuse. Whereas comparing it with a scenario where you start off well, but in the middle, naturally these two shouldn't be judged together or equally. What happens is, in addition to the fact, if, for example, if that spiritual nutrition is not purified, that ma'arif, that divine knowledge, aqa'id, action, ethics, if it's not purified from satanic abuse, what happens is, in addition to the fact that one's heart and soul will not be nurtured, and thus will not attain to one's potential, disastrous deficiencies may arise, leading the traveller upon the path of Satans or cattle or predators. It's all within. You are the cow, you are the predator, and you are the shaitan if this muraqabah in this particular fashion, where it's all to do with preserving the ibadah from satanic exploitation, if it's not observed, you become shaitan, you become iblis, or, depending on the actions, you become cattle, and you become predators, and even you're worse than animals. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala Tahir.